Mitch Albom was a sports writer, and then he got into writing books, and he very good at it. He sold over 40 million copies. The first one was Tuesdays with Maury. Now, some of you have read these books, I would guess, and it was it's a book about a guy who was his professor, and he found out that this guy was dying of ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and so Mitch went and spent time with this guy, and it became a whole kind of meditation about death and dying. That's something that all of us have in common, that we're all going to leave this world someday at God's command when he calls us. We don't know the day or the hour. And so by the end of it, he had himself a book and he wanted to sell it. So he had to get it published, and then he took the proceeds and paid for this guy, Maury, paid for his medical expenses. And then the next book was a little more controversial, The Five People You Meet in Heaven. There was some controversy about who's in heaven and who's not. For example, there was somebody in heaven from Illinois, and we know that's not possible. That's no, I'm kidding, anybody here from Illinois. But the idea is, who is in heaven and who's going to get there and how do we know and who gets to judge? Well, in the end, God is the one. He's the only one who gets to judge. He's merciful. He's just. And he wants us to prepare to live now so that we can have hope and peace and anticipation of what our life was really, well, what it meant, what it was for, who it was for God. The only people we definitely know are in heaven, Jesus, Mary, Joseph, the saints, that the church will say that we can say with certitude that they're there. How do we know that? Well, when a person dies and we invoke their prayers, their intercession, we say, like Pope John Paul, this community of nuns, they were praying because one of the nuns was sick with Parkinson's. There's no cure for that. And through the intercession of Pope John Paul, it went into remission. Doctors and so forth, they studied it and said, we don't have any explanation. And so he was canonized a saint. Now, sometimes a more concrete illustration, something closer to home. If and when I die and you decide, you know, you're praying for the Milwaukee Brewers and you're like, you're asking Father Martin, you know, help the Brewers to win. And if they win the pennant, that's a miracle. That's something there's no explanation, especially now that Craig Council jumped ship. And anyway, if they win the World Series, that's another miracle. I can be canonized because the Brewers won it all. Anyway, the idea is I want you to think about heaven. There's also an alternative, and we don't want to go there, but that's something that we spend our whole life preparing. We're supposed to have a plan for our life, not just live it arbitrarily without any direction. No, we're supposed to, well, my dad used to say, plan your work, and then you work your plan. We don't just kind of follow the whole crowd wherever they're going. No, we know where we came from, where we're going, and how we're supposed to spend our limited time in this world. A plan for our life. We have lots of plans, right? Hopes, dreams, and those are good things to have. When we were a kid, you know, you want to do great things. I remember this one student, she wanted to be a professional singer. I lost track of her. I don't know what she's doing these days, but her senior year, the basketball team made it to state. And there in the Kohl Center, they let her sing the national anthem. They gave her a mic, and she did a fantastic job. I said, way to go. Her name is Jordan. I said, wow. That's like one of those things on your list that you feel so good that you got to accomplish. There are lots of things on our list that we want to see the world, all 50 states, whatever. And I wanted to be a Monsignor when I was a young priest, and it ain't happening. So, sometimes your dreams change and you set it aside. But I was visiting a parishioner on Friday. He's going to turn 90 this week. And he said recently one of his kids gave him a ride down to the place where he grew up, the farm. He got to walk the land and see it. It meant so much to him just to be able to share that experience. And it reminded me of my aunt and uncle when my grandma was getting older. They'd pick her up on a Sunday afternoon, and they'd drive her around the places where she was once young. And all those dreams and those hopes, those things that kind of come full circle, the more we know each other and, well, the hopes that other people have, we can help them fulfill those things. We can be a part of their story, and they a part of ours. But the plan of life isn't just on a natural level, of what we're going to do today and how we're going to get through the work week and pay the bills and so forth. But it's a supernatural dimension that our spiritual life. How close can you and I grow to God? What kind of a friend can we be of Jesus? What kind of a witness? What kind of a disciple? Someone who really lives what we have professed. We not just here, but out there. We want to be a good friend of the Lord. So our faith is typically passed on. You say it's more caught than taught. A lot of things that we learn from example. My family prayed the rosary when I was little. My grandma's boat prayed it all the time. I remember I thought, I can't wait till I can pray the whole rosary by myself. And I remember the day that I did it. I felt really good. And that's a part of my life because I saw that in others and I wanted that for myself. I remember Pope John Paul, that he used to meditate on the Stations of the Cross every Friday. We always do it Fridays in Lent, but what's there to be gained in that? Well, you know, if you imitate the Lord, you become more patient, more forgiving, quicker to pray for people than to judge them. And the Pope was that kind of a human being. I mean, after all, the guy that shot him, he went into his prison cell and said, I forgive you. That guy never said he was sorry, but even so, the Pope forgave him. Little spiritual practices. When I was at Aquinas, I wanted to be available for confession, and there was no place, so I just set up a little place in my classroom, and they told me nobody's going to come, and initially they didn't, but, you know, eventually they started to, and then we built a confessional, and then I had a day of the week, and then we had to have 2 days a week, because the kids were finding that, well, God helps us. We don't have to feel shame and guilt. We should just let him into our hurt, into our brokenness, and then we don't feel so alone. And the more we let him forgive us, oh, the more we forgive others. I know confession is really difficult, and some people are sitting here thinking, I will never go to confession to you, Father. I take that personally, but it's okay. Now, you can go to anybody, any priest. I used to try the guys that were, if you could find the deaf priests, those were my favorite. Anyway, other spiritual practices that are important. Works of charity, right? That this kid, remember last summer, Kyle Lang, he was here, seminary, he was here for 1 month. And he got really involved. He was working at the Good Shepherd Shelter, Catholic Charities. He was making home visit with St. Vincent de Paul. He was doing all this, and he was only here for a month. I had to sit him down and say, listen, Chief, you're making me look bad. But the idea is, of course, what are we doing in our spiritual plan of life for the poor, for the marginalized, for people other than ourselves? The more you give, you know, the more you receive. And finally, the idea of daily Mass. If you've ever been, there's something beautiful that happens. Here at Holy Name, it's growing, and it's the vertical communion that we share with God, but the horizontal communion with each other. We get to know each other and support each other, and we miss each other when somebody is not here. I don't know that they miss me when I'm not here, but that's okay. That's a separate point. The idea, of course, is that we want to prepare. Those wise virgins had lived their life growing closer to God, and you can't give your faith to someone else. Each of us has to work on that in our own way, and we will die as we've lived, either in fear or in faith, with hope and the promise of eternal life, or the sense that I have so many regrets, I'm so sad, I never did what I wanted to do. In the end, we can say that, what can we say here? Let's see, we wrote down some notes, and the Packers are playing at noon against Pittsburgh. That's a different note. Anyway, don't forget that the bridegroom is delayed. Everybody falls asleep, the wise and the foolish. But the difference is the wise, because they practice their faith, they're willing to stand up for what's right and true and just. We get tired. You fight for the sanctity of life and the dignity of marriage and the goodness of God that he's put into this world. And sometimes it feels like it's futile. It never works. It never has a happy ending. Don't believe that for a second. The bridegroom is coming. He's going to sort it all out. He has a plan and a purpose. He is God. There is no other. He lets the devil have his little time and his little way, and he makes a big mess. But God, he is the one, majestic and kind, full of power and strength. Let's be wise, prepared, with spiritual places of hope, with a home for Christ when he comes.